On episode 22 of the Lunch in a Divorce Lawyer podcast, we chat with David E. Amos, a certified public accountant. We'll talk with David about some of the key and important tax issues in a divorce, with the big focus of our discussion on business valuations in divorce. It's a big asset in your case. David provides these valuations for the courts. He knows his stuff. So here we go. Here's David. David Amos, CPA and CVA. Welcome to Lunch and a Divorce Lawyer, David.
Peter, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here and talk about valuations and taxes and divorce and all things related.
That's awesome. No, it's an interesting topic for me. It comes up in a case very periodically. Like to me, it's not something like, I don't know, child support, child custody, messing around with a marital residence or something like, I always get a little old and stale, but I feel like the business valuation is, I don't know, like once a year, a couple times a year or something. I mean, we represent a lot of business owners, but with that being said, I feel like I'm not doing a valuation that often, but I'm really actually curious to learn a lot more about the process and what you're doing. Hey, so when I'm looking at your email signature line, I know what a CP like Peter CPA is. What's a CV like Victor
Yeah.
CVA? Tell me about that before we jump into things. I'm not sure I know what that is.
Sure. So CVA is probably one of the three primary valuation credentials out there. So it stands for Certified Valuation Analyst.
Okay.
So there are two others, the ABV and the ASA, but I think CVA is probably one of the more common valuation credentials, and it's been good to me and helpful for me, and especially the organization that sponsors the credential, offering continuing ed and supporting the profession and the brand.
That sounds great. So yeah, to jump off beyond the CVA and the meaning of it, which actually was helpful. What's kind of your path to kind of getting where you are? And I don't know that much about you. You're a
Yeah.
partner at, is it fair to say you're a partner at an accounting firm in Raleigh, North Carolina? I think that's where you are, but I'm just kind of, I'd like to hear kind of like, hey, where, how did you end up kind of where you are today professionally?
You're spot on. So currently partner at Carr, Riggs & Ingram. It's an accounting firm that offers the traditional accounting, taxes, audit, assurance work, but also consulting, which is where the valuation litigation support comes in. So I got my first job in accounting, public accounting in 2005, and worked for some smaller firms in Georgia, where I'm originally from. And after about, gosh, about 6 years there, my wife and I and two kids at the time moved to Haiti, and we spent 4 months living in an orphanage in Haiti, and
Oh, wow.
we taught in a school there, and we enjoyed our time, but make no mistake, it was a tough time, and grew a lot, learned a lot. And so when we came back from Haiti after 4 months, we moved to North Carolina. And at the time, I thought that my wife and I thought that's what we were supposed to do with our life long term, is to do cross-cultural ministries, things like that, working with children, and kind of in that context. And so we came up here to go to a seminary in Wake Forest. And so while up here, since I was certified as a CPA at the time, I worked part-time in that capacity, and was going to school, seminary, and I think just several events led me to a place where I thought it was time to kind of transition back full-time into public accounting. So I did that in 2014, and I expressed interest shortly thereafter in valuation. I'd always been interested in valuation, but I thought that it was a whole lot of art and not a lot of science. And I'm probably more science than art. And And so, but it, it I had a desire for it. And so fortunately the firm I'm at supported me in getting the training. And so I started doing that kind of on the side. And so from about 2015, 2020, kind of did that on the side of accounting and tax. And then in 2020 made the plunge full time into valuation and litigation support services. And probably about 85% of that being in the family law space.
Oh, wow.
That's the short of it.
So your day to day, so you're not doing tax returns at all. You're helping me litigate a contested divorce.
Yeah. And I think early on, I think tax taught me a lesson, and also just wanting to be really good at what I do. Tax is so, it can be so deep and it can be so wide, and it's hard to be great at what you do. And hopefully not from a prideful, a bad place, but I want to do a good job, and I want to have confidence in what I'm doing, and I want to be able to provide a good service, a product. And so I gave up the tax and the accounting. And so I don't do any of that. There are some clients that I had relationships with that I'm still involved to some degree as in a relationship partner, context, but that's probably less than 5% of my time. And so, I'm spending 95% of my time on valuation, and 85% of that is working with attorneys just like you.
Oh, very interesting path.
Yeah.
Sometime I'd like to hear about the Haiti seminary path. Sure. I'm not sure I have that much time for it, but I'm very intrigued about, ministry in Haiti. What seminary? Are we in Wake Forest, North Carolina?
Yeah. So the seminary is in Wake Forest. It's not Wake Forest Seminary. It's called Southeastern Seminary. Wake Forest does have a seminary, but it is in Winston-Salem.
Yeah. One of my better new friends during my half of the year in Florida is actually an ex-NFL football player who went to Wake Forest. And I was kind of kidding him when we were up in that area. I'm like, dude, I was in Wake Forest and there wasn't Wake Forest. Give me the backstory. Because I mean, I know the real, but it, right, it was founded there, but it moved like 100 years ago or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think it was founded there, moved, I think, in the 50s or so. And I think that seminary bought the campus. And so it's kind of a weird thing.
Oh, really? So you're actually where the original Wake Forest was, Southeast Seminary?
Yeah. Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary is the those are the hallowed grounds of where Wake Forest University got its start.
Oh, that's hilarious! I'm gonna tease that. I'm gonna give my friend down here a little some like local knowledge.
That's right.
Pardon?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great place. I think it's a great town.
That's cool. Yeah, we really enjoyed our, like I said, other than it was freezing in on Easter weekend this year, it was a good time around Durham Chapel Hill Raleigh this past year. So, David, let me try to tee up this conversation, get you talking about this, the subject of business valuations, right? I mean, here's where I would start, I guess, in my context. I'm going through I'm representing a parties in a divorce case, and let's just say, Jill Smith owns, I'm just going to say a restaurant, and it's an important asset in the divorce case. And then kind of how are you getting pulled in and what are you doing? I know a little bit the answer to that question, but just for a layperson audience, right? There's an asset here. It's this, this successful restaurant that's making millions. And then how do we deal with that in the divorce context, and sort of what's your role?
Yeah, I think it can look so different, depending on what stage I get brought into the mix. And there's so many things to think about. Typically when a business is involved in a marriage that the divorce is happening, it may be one of the more significant assets. And oftentimes we see that, somebody's going to get the business and somebody's going to get the house. And so there's some pressure. Some real life pressure, if we come up with a valuation that's lower, than what maybe the house is worth or something else is worth, then somebody may have to come out of pocket to keep the house. And so, I mean, there's real life, difficult, circumstances and pressures, but, But as much as possible, you know, we need to be somebody that's unbiased, right? We're supposed to be advocates for our opinion and our conclusions. And so we can do a couple different services in a couple of different phases of the process of marital dissolution. You know, first, maybe just for mediation purposes, we can do what's called a calculation of value. And that is one type of valuation under our standards where we can focus our approach and how we're determining the value of a company and kind of limit our approach and our methods and our scope, if you will, to try to help, you know, provide a number for people to, you know, to negotiate and to figure out, hey, can we settle this thing in mediation? Is it necessary? Or can we skip costly litigation? And so that's one of the things we do. And I think that, you know, that can be a really good thing. You know, there are some limitations with the calculation of value, because we're limiting to some degree our scope,
right,
et cetera, and trying to get a number. If things progress past mediation.
Hey, before you get onto that, David, what is there a simple kind of answer to, like, calculation of valuation? I think what you said.
Yep.
What sort of, I'm going to say, documents or stuff is that going to be based on?
Yeah, great question. So there's going to be some financial and non-financial documents. Oftentimes, you know, if a business is somewhat steady, either it's flat revenue and profitability is flat, or there's increases, but it's trending, if you will, it's steady. Then we can look at past historical performance, maybe by looking at tax returns and understand this company, and what sort of benefits or earnings or cash flows they're producing. Because, you know, we need to remember is evaluation really is understanding what the value of future cash flows are, right? And so nobody invests in something to get, you know, for a past benefit. I'm investing in Tesla, GE, Ford, et cetera, you know, to get a future return, a dividend and capital appreciation, right? And so we can look at financial data, tax returns, and understanding what that could be. We're also going to look at non-financial documents. You know, we're going to look at operating agreements. Are there restrictions on transferring of this interest? You know, we're going to look at data on the economy, on industry. Mm-hmm. You know, we're gonna ask for narratives on this company. What are the strengths and opportunities and weaknesses and threats? So it's a blend of financial and non-financial data.
Okay, sorry to cut you off. So that's a calculation of value.
Yeah. And so, and for a conclusion of value, it's a little different. For a conclusion of value, we have to consider all three approaches. In a calculation, we can limit it to one, but. And then in a conclusion of value, we're gonna present our findings, and we're gonna say something to the effect of, "Hey, this is my opinion or my conclusion," and this is really a necessary. This is a necessary engagement if we're gonna go to litigation. And so, if you're the opposing counsel and I'm on the witness stand, and you say, "Well, yep. What is your opinion of value?" And I said, "Well, I don't have an opinion. I have a couple of calculations, though." You're probably going to laugh me off the stand. And so, you know, I think depending on where we're at as far in the process of, hey, we're still talking and we're cordial to, we're mediating to, you know, we're in full board litigation. You know, we can tailor our engagement, you know, to the needs of the client. And I think I like to work very closely with the attorney.
Mm-hmm.
In determining that and what's the best route for the people that are going through the litigation.
Interesting. So the work product that you're giving me as the attorney is similar in either of those. It's just you're not giving, I'm going to say, an expert opinion in the calculation evaluation versus the conclusion of value.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. We, you know, we can do an oral report or a written report. Most people prefer the written report, although you can make the argument that to some degree, you know, putting things in putting anything in writing opens you up to attack from the opposing side.
Right.
But it's a written report. In the calculation report, it's going to say something to the effect of, had we done a conclusion, the results may be different. And so we're caveating, we're hedging that. Now, that being said, I never want to be engaged to do a calculation and then increase the engagement and do a conclusion and come up with a different value. So I'm probably going to do a little bit more work with the calculation than it's required. But you know, this is, it's really just about, you know, what the client needs. And I want to sell them what they need and what the best solution is in talking with the attorney and not, you know, oversell for, you know, pay me $20,000 for a conclusion when $12,000 for a calculation will work right now, you know, they got enough to deal with to, I really just see myself as helping folks cross the divide, you know, get over past this difficult time.
For sure. Is there a breakdown, specific or not, of kind of you do a lot of one versus the other? I would assume the lesser one, maybe, just because, I don't know. In my world, the end of a divorce, even though on TV people think you have a lot of trials, I also know that ultimately most divorce cases really are settled without kind of a final trial. In Cook County, Illinois, it's like 5% end up in a trial.
Yeah, I think it's probably split. We probably do the same amount of calculations and we do conclusions. And some of that is just driven by the attorney. You know, we could be headed for mediation and probably going to settle in mediation. And some attorneys just prepare, but they just prefer the conclusion. And it may be because they know the other side is going to get one of those and they don't want to show up to mediation with a calculation and the other side has a conclusion. But but you're exactly right. A lot of these things do settle. But you know, I think a calculation is a good route. It tends to be a little quicker. We don't ask for as many documents, and so it's a little bit quicker. It's a little bit shorter and easier to digest, and it's a little bit cheaper. I'm not aiming for the low cost provider, but
right.
I just don't know that sometimes that every time a conclusion of value is warranted, although some other appraisers would say never do a conclusion. And I'm not.
Is there a semi not complex, I'm not an accountant, way to talk about different methods of how a business is valued? Or is that the 2-hour seminar that we're not doing right now?
I think I ought to be able to do it, or I don't need to be testifying. So there are three approaches to valuing a company: the asset, and the income, and the market. And the assets pretty straightforward. We just take the fair market value of the assets minus the fair market value of the liabilities. So, what's your cash? What's your accounts receivable? What's your inventory? What are your fixed assets? So vehicles, machinery, equipment, and then minus the debts, accounts payable. Simple as that. It's the asset approach. The market approach is similar to if you've ever looked at a real estate appraisal, right? We're looking at comps. And so here's a piece of real estate that's like mine. Here's a business that's like mine. So we have access to databases where these companies are harvesting data from transactions of restaurants, manufacturing, job shops, things of that nature. And so we can look at that data and help us understand what our company may be worth. Now, we may actually use that data and weight our values. We may actually use that approach, or we may just use it as a corroborating approach to support our last approach, which is the income approach. And so the income approach, it's as simple as understanding a mathematical formula, right? The value through the income approach is simply the benefits divided by the rate of return. And when I say benefit, let's just say net income or cash flows. So the income approach converts the ongoing benefits that this investment is going to produce in the future to value by dividing it by a discount rate. So if we're going to invest in name the stock, if we're going to invest in GE, how much, what sort of return would it require for you to invest, $100? And so we just need to understand the benefit, what we're going to get in the future, and our required rate of return, capitalization rate. How's that?
It's a good summary. I'll be honest, I'm not a super math numbers guy myself, so I'm not sure how much more I want to pick on that, Scab. Yeah. I'll hire you as the expert on my next case for that.
Please do.
Is there a one side point, right? I mean, you use the real estate comps analogy. So, I mean, that's readily available. That's kind of like, right, I'm not in that world so much, right? The idea of comps for business sales, like that's a total thing and readily available.
Yeah, I think so. And if the standard of value, and this is a whole other discussion, right? But the standard of value is really important. But if the standard of value is fair market value, then what better way to determine the value of a company by saying, hey, this company operates in Cook County, Illinois.
Right.
They manufacture XYZ. And so I can go out and find five companies that are in the Midwest that manufacture XYZ, and they sold for X multiple, maybe 70 cents on the dollar of revenue, or something like that. And I can take those multiples and apply them to my company. And so that on a simple level, that's fair market value.
Have you, just a funny aside, have you ever been involved in any valuation of law firm values?
I'm actually talking with an attorney now about valuing a law firm. Which that has a whole nother, element to it that we haven't talked about. I just mentioned it, with family law, we have to consider the statutes of each individual states and the case law, right? I think you would tell me that if I change the definition of something, then I potentially change the meaning or I change the result, right? And definitions matter. And so in Illinois, if the standard of value is fair market value, and in North Carolina, it's something else, we could value the same company and come up with two different results. And so I think that's really important to think about it as well in the assignment.
Yeah, I mean, candidly, my greatest experience in kind of like, let's just say, business valuation stuff really is having bought and always, sometimes, I shouldn't say always, some days more than others, but sometimes I'm thinking about selling, a law firm. And so I'm a little bit acquainted with kind of, just sort of the business valuations in terms of kind of buying and selling a small law firm. And I mean, what's interesting in Illinois specifically is, it's only been about 10 years or so that the Illinois Supreme Court rules have allowed for the pure sale of a law firm.
Mm-hmm.
One of my first jobs out of law school, my very first actually, was basically I was going to be this guy's retirement plan. And because in that era, Illinois didn't allow the pure sale. So you would have had to kind of form an entity, and then it would have been a little trickier. Yeah. Whereas about 10 years hence, now you can really, they have some caveats. Yeah. I think you have to retire as an attorney, but otherwise I think fundamentally it is just kind of like buying or selling any other business at this point.
Well, and those are important concepts because, there's inherent in this discussion, and we'll introduce two other terms, phrases that can be difficult, is personal goodwill versus enterprise goodwill. That solo attorney that is making just a lot of money, for lack of a very technical word, making a lot of money and wants to sell, like who's going to buy that? Like,
right.
Today, there's a lot of value that's in that firm, but it's related to that one person, and that may not be able to, you may not be able to sell that. And so if your standard of value is fair market, like on the market, you can't sell that. But in North Carolina has investment value as a standard of value, or at least a combination of investment value and fair market value. If the person is going to continue to own the business, And even though he's the one or she's the one, that one person driving the value, North Carolina says that's includable in the marital estate. And so that's a big deal. And so knowing where you're at and having a good attorney like yourself that knows the rules is really important and can make a big difference in the outcome of your case.
Is there kind of a sweet spot or a general sort of revenue size of business range that you tend to be working with, or even a specific type of business? Are you the restaurant guy, or I mean, I'm totally
Yeah.
just making that up, but I would think, narrow niches are usually a good business practice.
Well, and I'm attempting the niche insofar as my valuation practice is 85%, family law. I haven't gone further to pick out a couple of industries, although I think I would like to do that at some point. I'm valuing a company right now that may be worth $60 million, and buying another one that may be worth, $400,000. And so, I think I'm comfortable valuing all of those. I think the concepts of valuation apply generally across the board, and I have access to other people that have valued companies before, and can get help when we need to, or and let's toss some things around. And so right now it's anything any business that's going through, that the owners are going through, equal distribution is kind of the sweet spot, ideal client.
Might sound strange, but is there a business that's kind of too small that it's just like forget about it? Not, I don't mean even just you as a professional, but even like in a divorce case, I feel like you have a ton of like just Jim with his van who does snow plowing and grass services in the summer. Do you mess with that? And I'm obviously not giving you like an income number, right? They're huge landscaping businesses, and then there's Jim and his truck with his one contract employee. But I don't know. Is there kind of a semi-helpful guide answer on that when it's just like, don't even mess with that in the case versus, let's do something. Let's put a value on it.
I do have a checklist for do I need evaluation, and I could provide it to you afterwards, and anybody
That'd be
on this
cool.
call that would want one. Now, it's general, right? It's a decision tree. If yes, if this, then this. But I do think, when we're doing evaluation, we do have to assume that the person that's owning and working in a business gets a reasonable salary, right? And so, for the example you just gave me, if I think you said Jim and his truck and his landscape business, if he's bringing home, if he's working 50, 60 hours a week, and he's bringing home, $60,000 to $80,000, well, and he's not paying W-2 himself anything, then I don't know that his company would be worth anything, because, after we impute or accredit him a salary. If Jim were sick and not working in the business, and we've got to go hire somebody else to work 50 or 60 hours, the net income is gone now. So in that case, it's probably not worth valuing, or maybe it's the asset approach. It's, hey, what are the trailers and the mowers and the equipment worth? Is there any debt? And maybe it's worth 10,000. But I think somebody else can figure that out for a lot cheaper than getting me to do it.
I feel like that in the business valuation cons, circle, let's just say. I almost feel like that's the question that I broach the most. It's kind of like, just the smallish sole proprietor, and what do you do with that? Whichever side you're on, it's like how much time is this worth?
And working with the right attorney, if I got to be careful here, because what I don't want to do is do a valuation or a type of valuation that's actually not sanctioned by the standards, right? But there are times which I can look at some profit loss statements, and generally get an idea, like they're losing money, or by the time you impute a salary, it's not gonna produce positive cash flow or positive earnings. There's nothing here outside of any assets that they own, minus any liabilities.
That's interesting. So, David, just as we, just land the plane, and thank you for your time. Kind of a maybe a best worst advice or things you've seen with people going through divorce, I guess specific to kind of this issue that we're talking about? Any stupid, really dumb things you've seen or best practice that you would recommend?
I think best practice, get an attorney that has experience with evaluation. And so somebody like yourself, somebody that knows. It's from my perspective, it's always better working with attorneys that are somewhat knowledgeable of evaluation, and not just attorneys just kind of like turn us loose and send us out into the field.
Right.
And so I think that's good. I think records and accounting is important, right? And so if we don't have good data, we're likely not going to have a good result. And so I think the accounting function, if you're headed towards divorce or thinking about it, I think that's important, getting those ducks in a row. And then just be mindful about, I don't know, tainting the well. I feel like sometimes people are headed in this direction and they start doing funky things with their business and their finances, and I feel like all that stuff comes out in the wash, and it tends to kind of taint the picture of the intent and integrity there. And so I think to be on the up and up, and doing and all that.
Yeah, digging in. Yeah, like, business. I mean, just speaking to myself, I don't think I'm doing anything funky. Knock on wood, I'm happily married.
Good.
But at the same time, it is right. There is definitely a separateness to like this small business, right? I have a sole member LLC as our law firm, and my wife knows what I'm paying myself and stuff, but does she know the inner workings of the business? Not necessarily, not really, not at an intimate level. Hey, so the fun ending question we usually give people is, what's your favorite Chicagoland fun activity to do or recommend? So you can answer that, or you can bring us into, what do you call your place, Tobacco Road over there in Raleigh? I mean, or however
Triangle,
you want to
yeah.
answer that question.
No, I absolutely want to go to Chicago. My wife and I went to Chicago last October, and I've been there previously. I mean, we had a great time. I think it's a beautiful city. I think the architecture is great. Obviously, downtown is nice, but I think I gotta go pizza, and
Oh gosh.
it may be. I need to be careful about promoting one or the other, but the deep dish pizzas. We went to New York maybe two months ago, and it's like I just don't know how there's really a competition between New York and
You
Chicago.
like the thick. You like all the cheese.
That's right. I mean, like it's a pie. Like was
Yeah,
it
it's much
pizza
more
or pizza
substantial.
pie?
It's a meal.
And so I think that, and I think just being there and just being in the city, it's just great to be there to walk around to observe all that it has to offer. And so, I do like my food.
That's cool. I mean, 100%. I mean, the architecture and the food. Chicago is a good food city. Yeah, like it's a solid food city, pizza and otherwise. So.
I would like to go to a ball game. We went to the museum. And just Soldier Field being right there, it would be great to go to a great great to go to a Bears game. And so maybe next time I'm there, I need to make that happen. Have you
You
been?
should. Chicago's done a nice job of protecting their lakefront. That was part of like Daniel Burnham's original plan. Because I mean, that's a big deal. You have a lot of green space along the lake. That's no joke. Hey, so David, just wrapping. Your ideal client that you work with, where are they? Is it North Carolina specific, or can I hook up with you when I have this case with the business when I need my expert? And where can people find you? Is there a website or et cetera?
So I think we really can work with anybody that's going through divorce and needs a business valued. There's an element of comfortability with me in North Carolina, understanding the statutes and the case law,
Right.
but I can work with you and be fine in Illinois. And so really it's anywhere, anybody that needs to get across the divide, and a good valuation would be helpful. So I think would be a good client. As far as where to find me, you come to our website, CRICPA.com. I we have we haven't talked about it, but I recently published a book on valuation for matrimonial lawyers, and
Oh, cool.
it's written, I think, at a very basic level by a valuation person for attorneys, but really anybody that's going through or may go through divorce and wants to understand a little bit about valuation work, I'd be happy to send you a copy. And so, if you want to reach out to me, I can send you a copy. My email address is DAMISS@CRICPA.com.
Oh, great. No, that sounds like a great resource. Yeah, I'd love to see one. Is that something I'm buying on Amazon or more you're using to inform attorney kind of network people?
You can absolutely get it on Amazon. I think I wrote it, wanting to give back and also wanting to, I think, just to establish authority, right? We establish authority by
Right.
writing and speaking, and so, and it was a good exercise for me in being able to articulate, trying to articulate things concisely and in a straightforward manner. So, you can find it on Amazon, or you can email me and I'll send you a copy. And I'll be sure to send you a copy.
What's the title?
Introduction to Business Valuation for Matrimonial Lawyers.
Okay. Awesome. Well, David, I learned a lot and so thankful for connecting and for you jumping on the show and podcast.
Peter, thanks for having me, and I wish you the best, and enjoy Chicago and Florida and wherever you're at.
I will. All right. Be well. Thanks, David.
All right, thank you, sir.
Bye. Well, that was a great and interesting discussion with David, because I've dealt with business valuations, and I think many mo well, any experienced divorce attorney has probably run into them once in a while, but definitely isn't something that comes into my day-to-day circle. But when you really think about it, and he, when you think about the common big divorce assets that are, coming across my plate all the time, real estate and retirement plans are usually the two big things. But number three, if somebody has a business or a business interest, that can have a lot of value. I know just as somebody who's bought and sold businesses, not been divorced, but have bought and sold businesses, it really is an important asset to take a look at in a divorce case. His breakdown between what he called a calculation of value, it sounded like a little bit of a less expensive way to go about getting a valuation versus a conclusion of value. Products to really bring into your case. Really, I think that is something you should think about if you're going through a divorce and you or your partner do have a substantial business ownership interest. And I will be happy to share a copy of this checklist that he's going to provide me. When should or shouldn't you really bring in a business valuator? Because that's my very genuine real world. You run into a lot of small business owners, but I always ask myself, in the one or two person smallish operation, is it even really worth my time and a client's money, expense, time, et cetera, to really do stuff like a business valuation? When is that important? So I'll look forward to grabbing that checklist and sharing it with you. And also, we'll include a link to David's book in the show notes as well. So I'm going to leave it there. Thanks again for jumping on and joining us on Lunch and a Divorce Lawyer. Wherever you're listening, please rate and review us. We've really been just rocketing in terms of our downloads and listenership. I enjoy doing the show and really want to provide a service and really help more people by having more downloads. So thanks for listening.